Kia ora, everybody. It's the Short Ball, the Rugby Pass podcast with Scotty and Mills, 7th of November, as we look ahead to the big test this weekend from a New Zealand point of view. That is the All Blacks taking on the English for the first time in 4 years. Millsy, before we get onto that, you've grown a beard.
No, I haven't, really.
You have. It's a beard.
No, it's a makings. Oh, it has a making of becoming very patchy. And it's just through being lazy, really, the last week or so. And then yesterday I was in the mirror and I thought, hey, I might give this a little wee crack and try and do a sumo Stevenson.
Yeah, I finally rubbed off on you after 2 years of doing this together.
Got to come off tomorrow.
No, I think you should keep it.
Nah, I've got a function tomorrow. It's got to come off. And I haven't been on TV for the last couple of weeks. So
yeah, I noticed. What? You should just keep going.
I know.
Does it get patchy?
All over. I originally thought I'd do Movember.
Yeah.
But I've tried that in the past, and to be totally honest, I sort of either look like Billy T. James or I'm somewhat look like a certain character off Once Were Warriors.
You look like Uncle Bully. Do you get the bully?
I do. The guys have gone harder in South Africa when I've done it once, eh? And you that didn't. Was the last of that. So, no, it will come off tomorrow.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know. I'll see what happens, mate.
Keep it. I think because obviously I've got to go to London and then Dublin. Well, keep it till I get back.
Oh.
It's 2 weeks.
Oh.
2 weeks. You can keep a beard for 2 weeks.
Okay, I'll have a good think about it just for you.
I just want to see where it gets to. I think you're not giving yourself enough credit. You look very capable of really bushing that out.
Yeah.
Does it go curly like the hair on your head?
I've never got it to that stage.
You've got to try it.
All right, maybe I'll try that. I'll go and discuss it with Joe tonight, and
she's going to tell you to shave.
See what the no doubt exactly.
There's no doubt about that. Let's get into the test match. Hi, producer Tina. Are you not? Why don't you plug your microphone?
She never does.
What are you sure? This isn't all. Oh, there you go.
Hey,
how are you going?
I'm all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is your bladder under control today?
I went wheeze before this pod. Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're starting to learn there. Yeah. You excited about the All Blacks this week?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it like a yeah?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. For real though.
Yeah.
I'm really
for
excited.
Real? You getting up for it? Or you just watch the highlights?
Nah, I'll probably be up the whole time.
Well, are you gonna go out the night before?
Oh yeah.
That's a Saturday. That's Saturday into Sunday. That's an intriguing conversation because it always seems like a good idea. I'll just stay up and I'll watch the game. It never works.
It never happens.
1999 Rugby World Cup semi-final.
Yep.
All Blacks, France. Mm-hmm. I was running a bar at the time. That was my plan.
Stay up.
Just stay out, close the bar, you know, have a couple of drinks, go home, straight into the game. I fell asleep at halftime.
I tell you what.
When I woke up, I wasn't happy at full time.
It's probably one of the better games to fall asleep, mate, for another 4 years, to be totally honest.
It was 4 more years. 4 years is a long time for England and the All Blacks not to have played each other.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
So there was a lot of hype when Eddie Jones took over coaching England because, of course, Eddie Jones is like a cap looking for a headline. So here he is, and he set up this proposition right from day dot about facing the All Blacks, facing the All Blacks, facing the All Blacks. It's always been about this. These players must be almost jumping out of their skin to get to Twickenham on Saturday night UK time and face this All Black side. What does that win last week against South Africa do for their confidence?
Oh, that's huge. And he set it up nicely because the fact that they beat South Africa, and that's another story anyway, but
we'll get there.
You've got to remember the dynamics of this team that he's sitting here. Apparently, they're only together 3 or so days. Mm-hmm. He's had a huge lot of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the most attractable game, but the fact is they won.
Attractable is a good word. I'm going to take that word.
You're going to take it?
Yeah, that's going in my word bag. Attractable.
Remind me it's from me. So,
you know what attractable is? It should be the description, the meaning of attractable should be an attraction that you can take back.
Oh, you should take it back.
Yeah, retractable. Nice. Like retractable.
Yeah, you retract what you say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point, Sumo.
It's an attractable game. That's
so
right.
It was an unattractable game.
Okay. Yep.
But they won. And the whole week now is just built around this game that Eddie Jones has talked about over the last, whatever, since he took over. And it's funny. He took a stab at the All Blacks as well, which it was watered down by Steve Hansen. The fact that, you know, they'll be sitting there sipping tea or something like that, I think is what I heard him say. They don't, won't be sipping tea. The All Blacks don't sip tea. Well, they do. It's green tea.
Green tea, yeah. Well, you can sip that.
Yeah.
You don't want to drink that in gulps, especially when the jug's just boiled.
Oh, no, it's really hot. So this game here now is just going to be huge.
Well, do you know what I like about it? I actually like the fact that Hansen and Jones have largely taken a back seat over the last few days because they're not playing the game.
Yeah, it's actually quite good, isn't it?
And let's be honest, the war of words could have developed. But, of course, this week there's been another conversation which has dominated the headlines, and that is the what's the best way to put this? The non-call on the Owen Farrell, Andre Esterhazy tackle. Now, here's the thing for me, right? I don't mind a tough tackle. All right, so this is not my point of view. But by all measure of World Rugby's own laws and their own directives about lowering tackle height and wrapping arms and whatever else you want to call it, that was a penalisable tackle.
Yeah.
So it's a penalty. And it should have been given. And privately, as I've written in my column this week, I'm sure Angus Gardner would have reviewed that game and thought, yeah, that's a penalty. No one talks about it. No one in a position to talk about it seems interested in talking about it. Not the referee, who can't talk about it. Not the referee boss, who should talk about it. Not World Rugby, who have sat back all week and watched debate rage around their siting process, around the laws of the game, around what a siting commissioner can do, about whether it was a penalisable tackle in the first place, all week. This game was on Saturday. It's now Wednesday, New Zealand time. When is someone just going to come out and say, hey, look, here's an explanation of that process. It was right or it was wrong. Just give us an explanation and then let everyone move on. Because instead of having our headlines dominated by what should be the matchups in this test coming up at Twickenham, and the philosophies around both coaches and the defensive setups and the attack plans and all the other things that make the game great, we have been absolutely sidetracked by debate in a vacuum. And don't tell me they can't do it, because they did it with Craig Joubert in 2015 when they threw him under the bus after the Scotland-Australia game. Paddy O'Brien did it after 2009 at the San Siro when he came out and pilloried Stu Dickinson's refereeing performance.
Didn't they do it to Angus Gardner in one of the games that he red-carded someone?
They did it to Glenn Newman, told the TMO decision not to award a try on the Welsh test was wrong. So we've picked and chosen our times when our officials can come out and say something was right or something was wrong. Why not this week? This has been the singular issue out of that test match. And it shouldn't have been, because the singular issue should have been John Mitchell's defensive plan is bearing fruit already. And secondly, South Africa bottled it, and they did. And Russie Erasmus is not dumb enough to say that penalty was the difference in the test match, because you just can't possibly say that. It was in the 81st minute of the game. You had 80 previous minutes to do something about England. So I don't know, Millsy. I don't know how you feel about it, but surely now the players are confused. The referee, I think it's Garces this weekend, he's going to be confused. The TMO is going to be confused. The siting commissioner is going to be confused. The fans are going to be confused. First tackle in the game around the chest. What happens?
Exactly.
What happens?
I mean, I don't understand why someone just doesn't come out and explain it. Okay, first things first. Okay, and this is the bit is, I think, okay, regardless, there's two points. There's the law, and they've obviously adjudicated on that. This is what needs to happen. You hit. You can't lead with the shoulder, apparently. But you know, you're always taught to lead with the shoulder, and then you go to wrap. Sometimes, and when there's impact like that, you can't wrap.
Yeah.
And so, okay, but the law says you can't lead with your shoulder, and then you've got to try and attempt to wrap. None of that happened. Okay. From my point of view, I think it was a legitimate tackle, but that's what I actually believe. But the thing is, there's been tackles exactly like this in the past where guys have had yellow cards for
worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Danny Cipriani just a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. And, you know, when you look at the law states what I just mentioned before. So a yellow card, a penalty.
Yeah.
They didn't do that.
No, and so this is when the issue has to get out of the jingoism. Because if you're an England fan, you play on, right? You're sitting there going, nah, play on. There's nothing wrong with that.
Look at his reaction when he did it. He knew at the time, jeepers, I could be in hot water. Angus Gardner explained to him that he thought it was okay. I mean, he was ecstatic because there was a part of Owen Farrell that knew, gee, I could be penalised for this, could be 3 points. And so I put it to you, the English fans, if someone was wearing a black jersey, particularly the same number, we wouldn't hear the end of this.
Yeah, but again, that's my point, right? Because I don't blame fans. I don't blame the Springbok fans for being outraged. I don't blame the English fans for saying, play on, fair enough, nothing to see here. And the reason for that is because they're invested in their team.
Mm. True.
I'm purely objective in this scenario. I'm invested in the sport. And it's the sport that concerns me here. It's not about the fortunes of England or the fortunes of South Africa. It's the game itself. Because these are moments in our game that serve to confuse its fan base.
Mm.
In a game that has already been accused of being too confusing for most casual observers who just do not get the laws at all and can't figure out one decision from another. Mm. So you've been given a gilt-edged opportunity to come out and clarify a confusing point of law in the sport, not for the sake of England, not for the sake of South Africa, for the sake of rugby.
Yeah.
And the opportunity has been squandered.
Yeah.
And that's the part that kills me. And I know that in the past, when you've asked for clarification from referees, privately they'll tell you.
Mm.
But they are silenced.
Yeah.
For 80 minutes a game, these guys talk nonstop. And then at full time, silence. Institutional silence.
Mm.
And that's the worst kind. And that's what frustrates me, because I don't want to be talking about this on Wednesday. I want to be talking about Ben Young's box kicking the shit out of the All Blacks on Saturday.
Yeah. So you think there should be an avenue where the ref gets put up like a post-match sort of interviewing process to talk about the game and things like that, right?
Look, that's one option. And I don't know what the solution is, but surely those who are in charge of the appointments and the officials of these test matches should be able to stand up and say, hey, look, there was a controversial moment in this game. We've reviewed the decision with the referee, and we believe that decision was wrong.
Yeah.
Does it concern these people that think that's a slippery slope to having to explain every decision in the game? Because I can only ascertain that that's the case.
Yeah, that'll be.
And no one's that stupid. I don't need an explanation for every decision in a game.
Yeah.
But a decision like that, which is seemingly so at odds with the direction rugby wants to go in terms of tackling, surely that's a chance to come out and say, either we back the referee, or we back the referee, but on this occasion the decision was wrong.
Yeah.
And in the future, our referees have been directed
to make sure.
Because what does that do? Then the fans know, without doubt. Mm. The players know, which I would have thought is pretty important. The coaches know. And the referees know.
Yeah.
So now any one of those things could be happening in the dark right now. The referees might have been given an instruction for the future, but we don't know about it as fans or viewers or observers of the game.
Mm.
Do the players know? Do the teams know? Has clarification been sought by Eddie Jones, by Rusty Erasmus, by Steve Hansen, by Warren Gatland? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's too much to ask for the body charged with the protection of the integrity of the sport to actually come out once in a while on big occasions like this, when the world's attention is fixed on that point, and say, hey guys, interesting debate, but here's the bottom line.
And here's clarity.
You don't have to agree with us, by the way.
Yeah.
You might think it's silly, you might think that we're wrong, but that is our view, that is our point, and we're world rugby, and we can make that point.
Yeah. And then it stops, other things from happening. Let's just say, for example, now, I mean, they call it the swinging arm. Again, I allude to the fact that you can't lead with your shoulder. But guys have been caught by grabbing and sort of swinging their arms. So which part are you then supposed to tackle with? But what it does is it actually gives players, fans, and everyone else watching the game clarity on what happens. Well, yes, there's going to be the odd person that will object to it, and there'll be a bit of criticism. But that's better than everyone else sort of putting their 2 cents worth in now about wondering what the heck's going on.
The thing about referees is there's not one of them out there who thinks they're right all the time.
No.
I mean, these people get to the top of refereeing plausibly and quite fittingly because they have emotional intelligence. They understand that they're human in a very dynamic human sport, that they're not going to get every decision right.
No.
Every player knows that.
Yeah.
Every coach knows that. And everyone who is reasonably minded accepts that mistakes are going to be made, that infringements are going to be missed. And on that note, if you wanted to blow up every infringement in a game of rugby, the game would just be whistle.
Yeah.
So these guys are coached and trained and developed to be able to spot the things that matter. Well, this matters to me. Mm. That decision and the entire process that followed, and what matters most and what hurts most is the silence.
Mm.
Because is it the case that, oh, well, everyone's talking about the game and that's good enough for us? People shouldn't be talking about the game like this.
Yeah.
This is not marketing. This is grist for the mill for the headline writers, but this is not marketing of your sport.
Mm.
Confusing your fan base is not marketing your sport. And confusing your players is not marketing your sport. And creating a rod for your own officials' backs is not marketing your sport.
Yeah. Well, it isn't. And the thing is, I hope, for the sake of things, another tackle like this doesn't happen again this Saturday, because if it's a case of them saying, well, we're going to shut up shop and be silent and just hope this game goes smooth and everyone can start talking about their game and hopefully this sort of gets swept under the carpet. Well, in some ways, I hope it does happen again. So then it's right out there, but we shouldn't be sitting here trying to get clarity off.
What happens this weekend if in the 10th minute of this match, Liam Squire runs up chasing a kickoff and absolutely melts someone? Shoulder high, no arms wrapped in the tackle. What happens?
You know what's going to happen, mate.
What happened? You tell me.
Well, it's going to be reviewed.
Yeah.
And then you'll probably get a red card.
Well, is that the case? But again, that's what I'm saying to you. Is it just a penalty now? We decided that particular tackle was just a penalty, because I have spoken to top-ranking officials, you know, under agreement that we wouldn't release their names because they're not allowed to speak about this. And by and large, most people involved in the World Rugby's refereeing think that it was a penalty kick only, Owen Farrell's tackle. A penalty kick only. And I think that's the salient point here, because if that's a penalty offence, then there cannot be a card for that in a test match again.
Well, it can't be. We can't be anything.
Because that's consistency, right?
That's right.
So if you're telling me that most people involved in the officiating the game believe that that incident was a penalty kick only, therefore no sighting should have been given anyway, but the penalty should have been given and it wasn't, right? So that's the threshold.
Yeah, that is the threshold.
So you can't go back on that now and say, unless you tell the fans right now that that's now a yellow card and we need to be clear on that.
Let's see. Well, what happens if that player that you used your example, that Leon Squire tackled, doesn't get back up? Does that factor into it then? And then the ref says, well, you know, this, that's what I mean. It needs clarity. I believe they need to review the rule. I think it was a legitimate tackle, but the way they've set this up, it obviously isn't. But they've gone against that. And so
we're going to get nowhere. It's a circular conversation. I know that. You're on the Short Board Rugby Pass podcast, Scotty Stevenson, Mills Molina. Frustrated today. I'm just frustrated.
It's like that. What about the Party Party Parkinson?
The hip throw, the body slam. On Sean Davies, how about that?
But someone's allowed to actually pick someone up and actually slam them to the ground on their back, right?
He got yellow carded.
He basically just did it like a, not a choke slam, but.
Yeah, you go into the clauses around that, and if you lift a player up and he lands on his upper back, then it's a card. But, ultimately, what's considered.
Was it on his upper back? It was flat on his back.
Yeah, and slow motion, you can see his legs go over the horizontal, but that's another point. I was commentating the game. I say play on. Poor Sean Davies, just don't run into a 2.04 lock again. How strong is that kid, by the way? Can we talk about Putty Parkinson? Holy shit.
He is a tall bugger.
So you got these two locks who are basically indestructible for the entire game as long as they're on the field. They're all of what, 20 each? Him and Osaa Walker-Leawedi. Walker-Leawedi runs 70 metres.
I thought it was another number on there, like one and four, not just four. Gee.
So we've moved on to the Māori All Blacks for USA here. But yeah, we need to. that was a hell of a tackle. I hope Davies is alive. No one's heard from him since.
Oh, it's Alex.
But do you think that's a penalty, tackle?
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, there's so much confusion around it. I've seen guys being picked up like that in legitimate tackle, slammed to the ground, the ref says play on.
But what about that tackle? Like, you used to make a tackle, right? A driving tackle where you pick a player up and you drive into him. Body slam him, right?
Yeah.
And, if you're anywhere on a club footy field, it's That's Chahoo's everywhere.
Oh yeah,
right?
Big time.
So I don't know.
That was one of my go-tos. Because there's never any way in the world that someone's going to come charging at me and I was just going to, dude, you know, like the big boys do. I was hoping to get right under and at least try and pick them up.
Because there's nothing worse, right? When you're in the air and you're going backwards.
And your legs are going up in the air. You're like, oh, he's got me. And you can be the smallest bugger in the world too.
That's always that guy. It's terrible. Like a little halfback move. That.
Terrible.
All right, let's pray for Sean Davies. Putty was amazing. And, you know, that was another incident this weekend. But we will move off this because I think all a fan can ask is that someone in a position of authority in the administrative core of the sport just comes out, reads the tea leaves and says, hey, you know what? This debate is uninformed and there's a lot of incorrect shit out there and we can fix that now.
Exactly.
And you're dead right. Most fans will look at a referee who puts their hand up and says, mea culpa, my fault, my bad, made a mistake. Nigel Owens has done it. Craig Joubert has done it. Every good referee in the world will put their hand up and say, you know what, in hindsight, I probably got that call wrong.
Mm.
And then most players and coaches and fans go, fair cop, mate. You can't get everything right.
Exactly.
But what doesn't change is that if there's silence, and I'm not blaming Angus Gardner, by the way. I think Angus Gardner's a bloody good referee.
Yeah, same.
And I don't think it should be up to him to have to come out in front of the media. I think it should be just, let's be adults. Get together, create a statement. You put out a press release for anything these days, except the biggest issue of the week.
Mm.
Should I stop now?
Let's get on to the game.
Yeah. All right. So the All Blacks team hasn't been named just yet, nor have the English team, although Eddie Jones has rendered his squad down to 25. But does the All Black team pick itself? And should we go through it? Obviously, they're going to stick with the double playmaker role. So you're talking about McKenzie at fullback, Ben Smith on the wing, Rico Ioane there. Midfield's interesting. Do they stick with Sonny Bill and Ryan Crotty? Do they bring Jack Goodhue back into the mix? That's a big question for me. Bowden Barrett will start at 10. Who starts at 9? That's another big question for me. You've got Reed, you've got Squire, you've got Savia, you've got a fully fit Retallick, I would think, and Whitelock, that combination picks itself. You've got Cody Taylor, Joe Moody, Owen Franks. So those are your starting talking points right now. Who plays at centre and who plays at halfback starting?
Well, I think centres, you'd have to go to the your Sonny Bill and obviously Crotty. Mm-hmm. That would be my pick. Sonny Bill in against the Australians was fantastic, and I just think he's had a bit of time off this year, and now he's just starting to get into the swing of things. Crotty will steer the ship, and they can always bring on Anton later on off the bench. He's played that role very well.
Yeah, well, and that's complicated for me because do they go Anton, who's shown himself to be a tried and tested bench finisher now,
yep,
or do they put Goodhue back in the mix off the bench?
Well, I think
because remember, Goodhue can cover both.
That's right. It'd be interesting to see how Goodhue has recovered from glandular fever, and whether they just give him another week or so, and just or have sort of got other plans for him, and just to get him back into the, you know, obviously next week the Irish game and possibly Italy. So I think from where things sit, perhaps Anton coming off the bench. Halfback? Wow. I mean,
yeah, it's a massive call. I mean, look, I would think that Aaron Smith gets the start. If for no other reason than just to let him know that he's still the dude.
Yeah.
And I know that seems unfair on TJ, who's, he's had his best season in All Black jerseys by some distance. But is this the kind of game that would suit an Aaron Smith?
And that's, I think that this is possibly why. I think his passing ability and that extra point, whatever second he gives Bowden Barrett, particularly when you've got bigger boys, the English, and how they come up defensively, I think he'll just give that extra bit of time to get the ball out to the backs, where I think they'll perhaps feel that they need to move this English side around.
They were very good at the fringe, that England pack. Man, they came around quickly on defence.
Yeah.
That blew me away, just how hard they were willing to work around the corners.
Yeah, and that's the area, I think. Their heart is pretty solid around there. And so that extra bit of time that the guy's going to get out, and hopefully you get your forward pack just outside 10 and around Sonny Bill as well, to manipulating that out. So I think the All Blacks will feel there's massive inroads in the middle of the park and particularly out wide. So perhaps the only bit I'd say would be that gets Aaron Smith is his passing ability. And that's where it becomes hard because TJ's been exceptional. You know, any other team, an easy starter. But I feel for this game, it'll be Aaron Smith's pass that gets him out there.
Did you notice something about that England defensive setup in terms of where their wingers were and whether the All Blacks will look to plunder that? Because their wings seem to be playing really high in that line. And there's a lot of space behind that I couldn't believe South Africa didn't exploit. And I think they're prepared to take the risk with that because they probably feel that the All Blacks' tactical kicking game might not be good enough. And I think that would be foolhardy if they were to play that high again against the All Blacks.
Yeah, I think they would be. The thing is, it's interesting to see what's coming out of the All Black camp, how good the kicking is from the English and what they do on the attack. And they have to sort of diffuse a lot of the English kicking, which is good. But you're right. The way the English open side wingers, and particularly both their wingers are defending, they're in the line. In the line, coming out, making decisions. So that what that does, it isolates the fullback. And, okay, they might not get sort of try-scoring abilities off it, but the way that Bowden Barrett and that cross kick and things like that's on the button, they'll manipulate whoever's at the back, get into space, and all of a sudden, it's more about momentum than anything else. Get them back there, make the wings think a little bit, and then once they feel that the wingers are hesitant in coming up and dropping back, that's when they'll start to explore it. So
do we see a hint of what they're going to do in that Australian game where they kicked a lot and they kicked for depth and they kicked for pressure as opposed to legitimately trying to create try-scoring chances, as you mentioned? Oh, I think we saw maybe part of the blueprint in action there, and it was pretty good. It was pretty effective.
Yeah, and it also against the Japanese. Right, I think, you know, and it worked a lot more. But what you've got to remember too, and I think, you know, Moonga will come off the bench. The way him and Bowden Barrett work, particularly their kicking, because they've got some they get pretty good length on them. I think the All Blacks have realised, you know, not to play too much. They played a lot against the Australians in terms of trying to manipulate them and sort of getting them round the corner. This is a different side. You've got to get them moving, and I think their tactical kicking this weekend is going to be crucial.
So, which brings us to the English. Benny Youngs, I mean, he kicked a lot against the South Africans. And, he went the full Connor Murray. Nobody go to full Connor Murray. He went the full Connor Murray against the Springboks. High box kicks, jammers, right down in the red zone. They know that tactic worked against the All Blacks in the Lions series. Is that Benny Youngs' go-to play? Pop it up, put them under pressure, keep them in the five, and make them work their way out of their own red zone.
Yeah, he needs to. The thing that's going to be different is he's going to get a bit of heat. You know, the All Black pack will know, well, if he's going to kick, we're going to put some heat on his kicking ability, where he likes to end up in his space. So they would have analysed how he kicks and what he likes to do. He needs to keep continuing that, you know, finding space. Those massive moments that he wins where it's just a little one over the top where they've just turned it over. Okay, we're not going to play. I'll dink one over and put more pressure on them. That's huge. And if he can do that, you know, the English have got a massive chance, but he's got to also, you know, realise that he's going to get some big tall timber after his, you know, charging his kicks down.
Oh, yeah. Brodie Retallack's penalty is going to be right all over him. Which brings us on the short ball today to the All Blacks line-out. You know, they forced a 77% win record on the Springboks, line-out-wise, on Saturday at Twickers. And the All Black line-out certainly hasn't looked to be as functional as it has been over the last couple of seasons. If you put Courtney Laws, Maro Itoje and others in that England lineup and they pressure the ball for Whitelock, Reid will be a target. Savia might even be a target. They know they've lost a little bit at line-out time, this All Black team. That's, to me, is going to be really crucial. And if England know that Touch is their friend in this game, that's where they can apply pressure. You've played tests against England where their line-out's been going well, Millsy, and it's a long day at the office when they take you to that piece all the time.
Oh, and the two locks, Laws even play six. I mean, that there is crucial. Their height and their ability to get forward. And we've seen, you know, the All Blacks, particularly in Argentina, I think they missed the first three or so. Then they went to the front of the line out and they still scored out wide. They're not going to be able to do that against this English side because you go to the front and you want to go out wide. Their defence is just so good and their line speed is awesome that they won't be able to get out there. So all of a sudden, you're on the back foot wondering, okay, well, here's an opportunity. But let's just say in the English half, here's an opportunity for us to be able to really have a go. We want to get some nice set piece ball, get going forward, some, you know, the speed of the ruck's going to be crucial. But if you're not getting that set piece, you're almost thinking, well, okay, well, now all of a sudden we're playing off, you know, 5 second ball off a ruck, and it just makes the day so long.
Well, and what happens is, I mean, the All Blacks are already showing willingness to take the quick line out inside their own half anyway, but there's going to be more pressure now for the likes of Ben Smith, Damien McKenzie and Rico Ioane to be organised in that back three, because they won't want to set lineouts in their own half.
Nah.
And the English will know that, so their kick chase will be better.
Yep.
And we could be in a situation where the panic starts to set in, because if you go in with a predestined plan in your head to say, right, if it goes out in our own, we're going.
You're supposed to jump, you know, if you're looking for a quick ball, you jump over the hoardings and everything and get it in. But
they're going to kick it into row 10.
Exactly. And you've got to also remember, it's not just the back three that are working. The inside backs have got to work their butt off to get back. Now, if you're being tackled,
forwards have got to run their blocking lines. Backs have got to get back.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're running these big boys into the, you know, Sonny Bill and Crotty and there, and they are just, you know, hammering away at defence, they're going to zap a lot of energy out of them to get back into those wide channels to be able to be an option as support. Now, and then you make the wrong decision. We know what happened against the Springboks where Geordie threw that ball in, and all of a sudden just those couple of little things like that, and all of a sudden, you know, the
tails
English were in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the tails are up and swing low.
Swing low. I love that, eh? I wanted to ask you this
on the short ball today, because we could delve into more specifics in this game, but I'm really fascinated by the sense of occasion that this is going to be. Mate, you've run out on that field. You've played the English. And we know there's not a lot of love lost between the All Blacks and England. And that's great. The rivalry's great. Yeah. I really enjoy that. As a viewer, as an observer of the game.
Serenman Hillary Shield on the...
Yeah, the Hillary Shield. The All Blacks won 9 of the last 10. I mean, it's not as if they've got a bad record. But what is it about that test and about running out on that field that drives so much passion and emotion and strength of feeling in the All Blacks?
I think obviously there's a lot of history. The fact that they call themselves the Rugby Union.
Don't like that.
Well, no, I don't know anyone else that sort of just names in the sort of Rugby Football Union. And so that puts a bit of edge in it. But the whole sense of occasion, you know, when you're on your way there and people are outside and they're, you know, white jerseys and everything else, they're so passionate about it. You walk in and the bus literally stops, you know, about a couple of hundred meters away from actually entering the stadium. You come out to these sort of gates that are sort of nice, almost look like gold. It's like you're in the old ages, like, and people, there's just this line of people on both sides and just a corridor where you just walk down and you look up and they're all above, like, on the stairs, and they're just chanting things down at you, and you're thinking, far out, what? It's like going into the Coliseum.
You're in the mixer.
You're in it. You're absolutely in it. And then amongst that, you've got some Kiwi flags as well.
Are they saying nice things to you?
Some of them do. Some of them don't. I have my earphones on. So.
You should take them off. You should have taken
them off. There wasn't any music playing. I just wanted to hear some Kiwis yell out to me. So I just. But, and then you walk into these changing rooms with so much history in them. You know, you got the bathtubs at one end and showers at the other. And then it's just. And you walk out and then they're just chanting, you know, swing low, well, sweet chariot. And it's an amazing atmosphere. It's, there's nothing like it. And then you've got to wait 5 or so minutes while you get the formality sorted and everything else like that. But it's from the time you leave the hotel, you go past all the bars at 2 kilometers per hour and people are outside
there.
And
you're getting thirsty all the time.
That's after. And then it's just huge. It's a huge occasion and it's massive. And so it's just really hard to explain, but it just gives me goosebumps thinking about going through old Twickenham and the home of rugby, as they would say it, is it?
You lost the English?
I have lost to them only here in New Zealand.
First test?
Yeah.
It's your first test you did?
First test, yeah.
When they were down to 13 men?
Yeah, mate.
Yeah, well, that game, Delalio, I'm back. I think we're yellow carded. Is that right, at Wellington? Westpac, do you want to talk about this?
Well, I was on debut. I was on the sideline.
I know you're on the sideline, but it's still You still remember it?
Mm, not really.
You do.
I like to remember that they're talking in games.
You remember it.
Oh, of course you do. Gee, I was wondering whether I was going to get on the field or not. Right? Joe Rocks was on one end. Caleb Ralph. And Dougie was at the back. I thought I might get on at fullback. And I was thinking, oh, no, Dougie is a good bastard, so he better stay on. Jay was out there. No, he's a good guy, too. I was starting thinking, oh, yep, Caleb Ralph, get off there, boy.
You were wishing Caleb Ralph broke an ankle so he could get on for your test debut. What will it mean this week? What will it mean? What is the meaning of this test? What happens if England win? What does it mean?
Well, I can tell you this, they won't. I think this All Black team, and this, I know there's been a bit of criticism about the fact they sent a lot of guys to Japan and mm-hmm. these guys go, but this will be the most prepared All Black team you've ever seen going over to the end of year tour. So what will it mean? I think this is a good chance now for leading into the Rugby World Cup next year for Hansen and co. to say, well, you know, we win convincingly, which I hope they do, and I think they will. Then it's just sort of says to the English that, you know, yeah, I know you've got a few injuries, but, you know, it's a chance to really sow a lot of doubt in their minds. A lot.
And you think the All Blacks will revel in that, not just the players, but the management, the coaches? They really want to make a statement here?
Well, I think it is. Now is the time to make a statement. Yeah. I think it's especially leading into that Irish game.
Everything's set up here because as soon as New Zealand had pulled Australia's pants down again for the third time this mm-hmm. year, the English rugby writers, God bless them, each and every one of them, already telling the world how far ahead the All Blacks are of everyone. But this is what happens. I mean, this is the standard news cycle. Set the challenge here. So if England achieve the challenge, it's a monumental occasion.
Yeah.
You don't say England are close because then you set the expectation of victory here. That's and right. if you pass it, it's not much of a headline. Mm. So everything is built up. The All Blacks are being built up. This happens all the time. We've all seen this cycle of news. And the British are very adept at it because the history of their journalism dictates that this is what has to happen. But they've set this All Black side up to say they are miles ahead. Miles ahead. So that being the expectation on the English, if the English manage to get out of this respectably in an unattractable game, then does that go some way to assuage any pain of defeat to say we're not far away.
We're not far away. We've got this and that. Gee. That's crazy.
I mean, I would tend to think that you make 11 line breaks against the Springboks and you can't score a try says a lot about England's attack.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's test match rugby. Sometimes you don't finish. But Australia forces 20 missed tackles on the All Blacks, and they don't finish their opportunities, and they get done by 40 points.
Yeah.
And I know that Australia are in a different world at the moment to England, but if you do not take your opportunities against this All Black side, I don't think you beat this particular All Black side in threes.
You can't beat these guys in threes. Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, I know I mentioned before about the fact that they possibly will go a little bit wider. I'm looking forward to the battle up front, man, because both sides, and traditionally the English are huge on their set piece, huge around, you know, hitting bodies, but we've got some pretty hard hitting boys as well. So I'm looking forward to who dominates, you know, there and who gets beaten up.
Wow. We're going to run a book on Dylan Hartley and whether he has a brain explosion in this test.
Well, that's what it could come down to. I mean, he can't afford to, because little moments like that will just ruin his side's, you know, opportunity to be able to stick with the All Blacks.
It's exciting, isn't
it? He's a good player, too.
He's a good player. I like Dylan Hartley. He's combustible.
Oh, mate,
I think is the word for it. Combustible. Score prediction from you, Mills? Want to make one? You don't have to.
I reckon the All Blacks will win by 20 plus. I know it's a test match, and really I should be...
20 points.
I should be really saying, yeah, it's a test match, respect it, but...
This is why they think the All Blacks are arrogant.
Oh, no, I'm just being honest. It's the former players that make them arrogant. Yeah, okay, well, put it on the former players. Don't put it on the current players, because as a former player, I'd rather be sitting here saying, 28 points!
Are you excited about Wales, Australia?
Actually,
you don't have to be.
Well, the Wales, you tip them over. But I'm not. I'm not excited at all, actually.
Wales will win that game.
Well, they should do.
Well, they got past the Scots.
I still, there's a bit of me that says, come on, Aussie. But they've let me down this year, mate.
How big is that bit of you now? Because you started, like me, you started with a big bit.
Mm.
We both had a big bit saying, come on, Australia.
It's like those bounty bars, you know, when you start with that massive bit and then all of a sudden they get cut into halves and they come in, you know, two halves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now one of those halves has been chopped again into half. That's a quarter. And then that little other part's been chopped into half again. Well, that part there that's hanging off with this little bit of coconut on the end of it.
Yep.
That's the bit that I'm feeling. If that's a description.
Which bit's the little bit of coconut?
Well, obviously.
Hanging on the end of it. That's a legitimate. Hey, that's a legitimate question.
That bit of,
so what are we down to? A 16th of a bit? Let's move on from that. That was a malaprop on my part. Is it 1/16th of a bounty bar? Is that how much?
I was going to describe it as that, you know, that's hanging on to that brown bit. But hey, you might you'll find some other way to make it sound differently.
I didn't say don't bring race into this. It's been a short ball for another week. Enjoy the test match. All Blacks England always want to savour, and let's hope, beyond hope, Millsy, that we don't have to deal with another refereeing controversy or controversy, depending on. Send your thoughts. Is it controversy or controversy? Send your thoughts into 0900 short ball.
And it will be unattractable if it does happen.
It is it's an unattractable. You're not an unattractable man. You're very attractive. Bye.